Blog Talk Radio.
Provocative talk is what we do here when black men talk. It's been a little bit. Is 2020 kind of winding itself down? We're kind of preparing ourselves for 2021. Myself, Mr. DeMaurice, and Mr. Charles will get together soon and explore some different topics this evening. Actually, the main topic is going to be this evening is going to be on the why are men single? But I want to go back to 2020 kind of leaving us and moving on. And as we prepare for 2021, I don't know about you, Mr. DeMaurice, but I'm ready to kick the son of a bitch in. How about you?
Wide receiver, baby. All for it, man. All for it. This has been the roughest of the roughest, as Spike Lee would say, of years, man.
Yeah, I think something about this year that we should not take for granted. I mean, a lot of different things have happened. We know, but if you're left standing, and you're left breathing, and you're left to be in one piece, don't take that for granted. Just don't, because for a reason, you made it through. There's always a lot to complain about, but for their reasons, you made it through. You made it to where you are, and you're on the brink of walking into a new year. So walk in with your head up high with a big smile. I had a chance to speak with an aunt of mine a few days ago, actually Christmas Eve. Had a chance to speak with her. We talk often for the most part. I've been talking to her throughout the years, and she's 88. She's my father's baby sister. Imagine that. My father's baby sister is 88 years old. Yeah. Interesting. When I was a kid, we always, for the most part of our summer, some of my summers I spent in South Carolina. She resides in South Carolina. And I always remember back in the day, we would load the Do-25, the Deuce up, and drive down to South Carolina. My brothers and sisters, mom and pops, seven of us in one vehicle. And, of course, you know, we had the fried chicken in the bag, baby. Ain't nothing better than fried chicken left over.
In the aluminum foil or wax paper.
Yo, man, come on, bro. Come on. You can't eat it no better than that. You just can't. You ain't leave the house for an hour. You already asked mom for some chicken, bro. But, I remember once we got there, man, how my aunt would basically turn her house over to us, in a sense. She would just basically kind of move out of her bed, move her kids out of the way, her husband, and she just basically gave us run on the house. But what I really remember is waking up in the morning, hearing her cooking breakfast. The bacon crackling, you smell the sausage, and the biscuits were being made. And from time to time, I bring her back to that. And she said something to me that was interesting. We were speaking on Christmas Eve, and she said, I sent you a Christmas card. She said, my kids are telling me that we don't do Christmas cards anymore. Everybody do Facebook. She said, I'm not into all that Facebook stuff. She said, I'm going to take my time. I'll write my cards. I've been doing it for years. I said, Ruby, that's why I love you. That's a part of the reason why I love you. But she said, there's something about sitting down and having dinner with the ones you love that just can't be replaced. She said, and that's a loss in the current day. She said, our people always had that. We found a way to get together, break bread, and eat. And she said, there's so much going on now to distract you from that, to take you away where kids are on this or on that. And when you think about it, I don't think we do that anymore. And I think we might have lost the value of that. Just getting together, if it's once a week or a couple times a week, sitting around the table and making sure each one is okay. You kind of grew up like I did, man. So I know, I mean, every Sunday, most of the time we try to get together during the week, but every Sunday there was a dinner made, man, that the women get together, sit down and eat. So I'm going to take you back to your childhood, man, if that was there. And how do you feel about that in current day times, the void that has kind of left us by not having that?
Yeah, man, of course I was there. When you were talking about when you would go to South Carolina, it was North Carolina for us and my father's side of the family. And so I got much love from my aunts and uncles now, because when you came down there, man, exactly, you take over the house. They they spared no expense on making you comfortable, and you didn't want to leave when it was time to go. You didn't want to leave because of how great they were treating you. But I think it is this, man. I remember being over Grandmama's house and on Rosette Street, and all of us getting together, and you know, it was a small kitchen, but everybody was packed in the kitchen, the living room, anywhere you can get a table to sit down and eat. That's what you did during that time. And and Aunt Ruthie always had a nice spread and nice desserts. And even on my father's side of the family, it was warm enough during that time where you put out the picnic tables, man, and you just sat out in the yard and ate during Thanksgiving and some of the holidays where it wasn't really cold. You can go outside. And so it's really missed, because at that particular time you break bread, you sit there and you talk, you laugh. Some of the funniest conversations and funniest stories came out of that that time you spent with families, but also life lessons, sitting at the table listening to folks about different life lessons. That's being missed. Nowadays, you know, grab your plate, go sit down somewhere and try not to mess up wherever you're sitting. Is pretty much, or you come in and eat when you want to eat, and there's no really time frame or a time where everybody sits down to eat. So I think that's really missed this in this day and age, especially when I think we got away from it, you know, because people kind of lost the kind of flavor that brought to the family, and missed the meaning of why you sat down as a family to break bread. And it didn't have to happen every day, but usually in those special days, or at least on Sundays or on holidays, that was something that I looked forward to, because I know on both sides of my family, man, the women in the family can cook. Oh my goodness, you couldn't wait to sit down and eat, and you always knew who made what and what you wanted the most of on your plate based on what household you went to. So it was my Aunt Helen, her fried chicken, my mama, her baked chicken, grandma, her stewed chicken. You know,
yeah, sure. You know,
somebody made the macaroni and cheese. Somebody made the desserts, and they had them all laid out. I remember Aunt Ruthie made a rum cake, and she had all the different cakes on the table, kitchen table, but she had the rum cake behind, like, a refrigerator. And I went to the refrigerator to get something to drink, and I happened to see the rum cake. So I'm like, nobody eating this cake, so I'm going to eat this cake. Man, I must have got like 4 or 5 slices of that cake, man. And I wasn't feeling too well. I was down and out for 2 weeks. They found out he ate the rum cake. drunk as a skunk, like 7 or 8 years old. Eating that rum cake. Well, you miss like funny stories, funny times, funny moments, spending with your cousins and family. And especially during this time where everybody's, you know, encouraged to kind of stay quarantined and not travel. I know a lot of people are missing it, but, you know, you got to make that sacrifice. So you do have that time where you get to spend with them maybe in the next few months or so.
Valuable moments, man. I'm going to say this, and it's interesting because in my household on Sunday, collard greens and macaroni and cheese were a staple. I can do collard greens, bro. But for some reason to this day, man, I just can't do macaroni and cheese, man, for whatever reason. I'm a brother that cannot do macaroni and cheese. I don't know, because maybe mom made it every Sunday and I was forced to kind of eat it to her. I just said, you know what, I'm never going to eat this stuff. But even to this day, mac and cheese does not fly well with me. Mr. Charles, welcome back to the days when we used to get together and have dinner. I mean, of course, we don't have time. Things, life is busy now, but we'll just stop and think about it. What are some of the things you think we might miss by not getting together every now and then, not waiting for Thanksgiving or Christmas, but getting together more often and breaking bread?
First of all, I want to come in and say thanks for having me, and I want to apologize to you, brother. I want to apologize from the bottom of my heart, and I'm going to tell you why. Because if you don't like macaroni and cheese, you ain't had no good macaroni and cheese. No disrespect to moms and whoever made it for you, but my God, bruh.
I'm holding my heart right now.
Bruh. When that stuff was burned on top, if it's burned on top like that, boy, you had a fight people to get that damn macaroni and cheese burn on the top. Dude,
I got some frozen in the
I am sorry, bro, because evidently, I mean, I I'm not going to stereotype it because I don't like watermelon, so we can go there too. But I'm just telling you, bro, macaroni and cheese, come on, bro. It ain't your fault. You just ain't had the right one. That's okay. You ain't had the right one. It ain't your fault. It is not your fault. I'm okay with that. I'm just telling you, bro, because there ain't no way in hell that you can – that you would not like it. You come to Ohio. You know what? I'm gonna have somebody make some. I'm gonna mail it to you, and then tell me you don't like macaroni and cheese.
You better sit there. Eat that macaroni and cheese.
Yeah, boy. Hey, you taste it. You like?
Yeah, every bit of it.
And I don't like macaroni and cheese.
What?
Ate the whole damn thing. Anyway, all right. Let me get back on track. Your question. In regards to what we're missing, I think it's the understanding and the bonding of family. It's also the understanding where you come from and a pride. I think there's a lot right now that, particularly with these young kids, and my family is notorious for this right now on one side, actually on kind of like both sides, where we have lost, some people have lost the connection of pride of family. I remember my great-grandmother, my mother's grandmother, the women on that side of the family, because the men had either passed away or whatever, and women were just, there were some very strong women on that side. But every Father's Day, no matter what happened, we had a decent amount of family, people lived out of town. Every Father's Day, everybody better be in the building at my great-grandmother's house or at her daughter's house, honoring the family and honoring her, but just honoring what we had. And I'm telling you, people moved like 5 hours away. And unless they were sick or dying or dead, guess where they was at some point during that weekend. You better be there on Sunday. And I think that we're missing the pride. We're missing the connection of family, because a lot of the younger kids, like on my family, the kids don't know each other. My cousins, my first cousins were my family, because I didn't have any brothers and sisters. So I think that key is the connection that we have between one another. You don't even know who your cousin is. You go around the corner, you don't know who the hell that is. You might be marrying your cousin or hanging out with your cousin. But I think that connection of family and pride is when we don't get these get-togethers and connections, really hurt the family overall.
Yeah, we got to find a way to start making that happen in our families, man. We really do. I think we miss some valuable time and valuable moments and teachable moments, man. Just get together from time to time. Don't wait till Thanksgiving. And the calendar basically tell you to kind of pull out a turkey or ham and find time. If you got to basically pull out a grill, I like cooking it in cold, cooking out in the cold, so it doesn't matter. Pull a grill out, invite some family over, get together, and, just kick back, have conversation. Gentlemen, we want to salute a 36-year-old cat, Brandon Scott. This young man's holding down the job of mayor of Baltimore, Maryland. Think about that. 36 years old. And he's been elected to be mayor of Baltimore, Maryland. We're going to keep an eye on him. Wish this brother much success. We're going to take a little break. We come back. We're going to spend some time for the rest of the show, for the most part, talking about spending time kind of pondering the idea, why are men single?
People can talk about me and say what you will of me, but I'm not worried. I've got a whole lot of money and a fine place to stay. I got 3 or 4 cars and I ride around every day. I ain't doing too bad. I ain't doing too bad at all. Well, I ain't doing too bad. Full of girls that I can call on the phone. They all dig me because my conversation is so strong. I ain't doing too bad. No, I ain't doing too bad at all. Well, I ain't doing too bad, baby. I ain't doing
look here. I just wonder, you know, how does one move from a life like that, Mr. DeMarie, and just move into marriage? Is it possible? Because that's where I'll start this. I asked the question, why are men choosing to be single? When you're living a life such like that, what moves you off that perch, sir?
I was talking to a buddy recently, and he was talking about how, you know, he's married now, but he said, man, if I ever get single again, if I get married again, there's a trick to it, because I ain't doing this no more. I mean, he got his full of it. Still love it. And he's like, uh-uh. It's a trick to it. You see me get married again. So I think, you know, I've said this probably 1,000 times on this show, man. We're getting into a society where women outnumber men, man. And when that phenomenon happened, men had options. Men had options, and women have found themselves competing for men if they really want to settle down with someone. And men are very, I know, especially men who are more seasoned, are particular, and they know what they want. And if you're not what they want, they're not committing. They're just not going to do it. I don't care what you do. I don't care what you throw at them, how much you throw at them. They're not going to commit because they know what they want. They have been there, done that. And if they don't see that it's something that's going to be fruitful and going to contribute to their happiness, and it's going to be drama, and it's a potential to be a drama, then they're not going to move on it. And I know we're all seasoned, and we've seen a lot between the three of us. We pretty much know what we want. And if it's not what we want, there's only so much you're going to get from us. And the commitment is not one of those things you're going to get if you're not what we want. And we'll tell you, you know, this, I'm not the person for you. I'm not ready for this particular situation at this particular time. And so I think men are choosing to steer away from the drama, steer away from the stress. They do say that married men live longer, but not some of the buddies that I know are, you know, most of them are miserable. And that was one of the things that got me out of my marriage is, like, I don't want to be miserable. I saw my uncles and older people in my family, they were just staying in marriages because of whatever reason, you know, values or religious. And I just saw how miserable they were. I had uncles that you didn't even see when you went over their house. They just stayed in a room and watched TV. And you didn't even know their home. They were so miserable about being at home and being married. And you saw how sick some of them were, all that stress of being in marriages that they didn't want to be in. And I made a decision a long time ago, that's not going to be me. That's not going to be me. I'm not going to be miserable. I'm not going to be all stressed out. I'm not going to be in situations I don't want to be. I'm not going to do what I don't want to do. And so because I saw the other end of it, and I'm like, I don't want to kind of just, you know, see that same path and then just go down that path and be exactly like them. I want to be happy. I want the best out of life. I want to be in the best relationships. So I'll wait. And if it doesn't come, oh, well, long as I'm not stressed and I'm still drama free, I'm good. I'm good. And I'm a person that loves my solitude anyway. I don't mind being alone. I do most of my best work and best thinking and best things when I'm alone. So I'm not stressed and I'm not pressed to get in relationships.
I'm going to tell you something, man. You ain't leave a lot of room for myself, Mr. Charles, because you covered it mighty well. Boy, did you cover that. And, I mean, you touched on a lot of good points. And I think I'm just going to kind of piggyback on some of them. I think also the options thing, I get that. But I think the mere fact of standing back and seeing others come up, like you said, as uncles or whatever, even when you're of age, when you see so many situations of marriage that makes you shake your head. And like you said, a lot of relatives or whatever, cats, they get in marriage and they're trying to do the right thing. They really are. But they feel up against it, and they're living life in a miserable sense. And every now and then, they will open up and share and tell you some things. And they it take them a while. They just don't run to it, but they might take them a little while to run to say some things to you. And when they do, you stand back and you go, wow. And I'm not saying because they were miserable, you have to be miserable. I'm not saying that if you decide to get into marriage. But I had a friend of mine, a coworker, said to me this about a week or 2 weeks ago. And him and I have been working together, 10, 15, I'm going to say about 10 years. Off and on, we worked together. And we were in the room the other day. It was him, myself, and another coworker. And he's married. He's been married for a long time. I'm going to roughly say he's a little younger than me, probably 30 years, 20-some-odd years. Been married. Kids are grown. And we weren't even – I forgot what he was talking about. But he wasn't looking at me. He said, Mark, I'm jealous of you. And he said, I love the fact that when you come home, they ain't nobody there telling you what to do. He said, you come home, you're alone. He said, somebody there to boss you around. He said, nobody's texting you, calling you, asking what time you're coming home. He said, no one, when you're there, not making you happy. He said, you have a choice. And I'm looking like, whoa. And my thing is, it takes a lot for another man to tell you he's jealous of the way you're living as opposed to the way he's living. That's not easy. And I used to tease him sometimes throughout the year about being married or whatever. So it took a lot for him to just open up and share that. And that speaks volumes. So I you know, as myself, you know, being divorced for a long period of time, a lot of things you said register. It's like, you know, once you've done it or if you've never done it, if you put yourself in that situation, you want it to be the best possible situation it can be. There's going to be some friction. There's going to be some things. Everything is not going to be right. But you don't want to put yourself in a situation where someone just wants to be married because they like the idea of being married and they think they should be. And they don't know how to relate to you. They just don't. They don't know how to understand you. They make it all about them, what they want, what they need. And what has happened over a period of time, I mean, there was a period of time I didn't even think about getting remarried. I didn't even think about it. But in that process, you meet people, that's all they talked about, marriage. And I wonder why, and that's a question going to come up later. Why are they in such a hurry to be married? But I'm going to swing it over to Mr. Charles because I'm not sure where else we can go with this particular question right here, Mr. Charles, because B. Maurice, he took this one around with it, sir. But if you got something to add, I'm willing to kick back and listen.
Yeah, he did. He did take it and put it all the way around. He put a bow on it. He really did. But and that's cool. I don't have a problem with that. He definitely put a bow on it. But there's always a room. There's always room at the end, baby, for a little bit more. But so when I look at it, I think he hit the right word when it comes down to you want to be stress-free, man. I mean, that's something that you know, it's hard to deal with. Because in most marriages, there's always some strife. There's something going on. And that's hard to give up when you can just come home, as he said, relax, kick back, do whatever you want to do. Because your mate, in my understanding, is supposed to enhance your lifestyle, your living arrangement, whatever it may be. It's supposed to enhance your life. So there's supposed to be understanding when you're together. And then sometimes you need some time to yourself. And they're supposed to understand you. And I think that's very key because growing up, as we all said, we had uncles, cousins, the older brothers, whoever, and I've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly of marriages, right? I know what, if I ever got married, I know what I would want and who the type of woman I want to be with and the way she will react and understand me. And I know the type of women that I would not want to be with. So to give up all that, it's going to take a lot. Because right now, bruh, you got the TV, you got three TVs on at the same time. You know what I'm saying? You not even in that room. A light on, you can do whatever you want to. It's deeper than that, but it's just one of those things that you just don't want a lot of strife at all. The other thing, too, that I think you hit it right on the head, and it took me a while to understand it, was the factor that the number of women, the ratio of women to men. And back in the day, we were always thought, we were always programmed like, hey, this woman, and she's really a great catch. You go after her, you know, you have to court her, chase her, whatever, go through the process, and you just have to do things a certain way, because if she's a diamond like that, then you really got to do what you got to do to grab her, because so many other people are going to be knocking on the door. But now that's flipped. She might be that catch still. But hell, if it don't work out with her, there's another one coming, bro. Just on pure numbers. And as a man, if you a good commodity and you a good catch, you got options, because now the tables are turned. The women want to be with a good man, and what you bring to the table is a lot. So now you can be somewhat picky. Okay, you don't have to be pressed. But there's a lot more options out there.
Yeah, well, you two don't leave me room with a goal, man. I love it. I do. You too. Just don't leave me room. I think, too, what a lot of men have realized, especially as we start to age, because when we're younger, you know, looks are important to us. And if I was to ask this question, I'm sure a lot of us raise our hand. We have dated women that we felt were attractive that were head cases. Head cases. So you go through that a few times and you realize, okay, what am I really shooting for? Do I really need this? And what I hear from both of you saying is peace of mind. In a sense, you don't want any stress. And you want someone that's going to enhance your peace of mind. And what I've noticed is over the years, for a lot of men, of course, we don't mind coming home that nobody's there. But here are a couple other things that we don't really, you know, mind dealing with. We don't mind waking up alone. You know, we like having, you know, I'll speak for myself, and I think when I say this, I'll speak for most men. We like having the bed to ourselves, the whole bed, king-size bed, just to where you can move around. You know, sometimes I wake up on the other side of the bed, just be happy, like, man, that's a lot of bed over there. A lot of bed over there. And I might stick my feet over there and be like, yeah, it feels cold, but it's good. Because that's that peace of mind. I mean, it's great to have company and have someone near you. But if it's not, it's no big deal. And if they are going to be near you, it has to be correct. It has to be someone that's going to enhance your peace of mind. Someone that's going to give you an opportunity to glow and flourish. And basically, I'm always looking at, if I'm giving you something or some things, you have to be bringing those things back in some form or shape. I just can't be delivering to you. And I think a lot of guys came up against that. We're willing to offer and give, but they kind of pick and choose what they want to give back and what they want to offer. Here's a question that, you know, I wanted to put out. I'll come to you first, Mr. Charles, because we talked about trust and love a few weeks ago and the balance of what we need. But at the heart of it, at the real naked heart of a relationship, and maybe the reason why we're kind of staying single also, do we trust women?
I think you trust the right woman. Yeah, the right woman. All women, I think it's based on case-by-case basis. And like you said, I think we trust not all women, but some women. Because, again, if you're going to be vulnerable, you want to trust that woman has your best interest at heart and not try to make you feel some kind of way because she wants you to do something. And when you're vulnerable, that means you trust somebody with your vulnerability. And I think that goes a long way.
I'm going to take a different approach to this. I don't think we do, bro. I mean, I hear what you're saying. I respect that. And you're right. It's individual. But I think when we look back and we look at the landscape, we don't trust them. Because we believe, and a good portion of it is true, that once you get to a certain point, they change on you, Doc. They change. I've heard this from many married men. Once I said I do, I didn't know who the hell I was married to. And I don't think we trust them per se, because I think at the heart of things, it's not that when I say trust, I'm talking about cheating, fidelity. I think at the heart of things, we don't trust them to really be what we need them to be when we need them to be it. We don't. We don't trust that. We just don't. So it makes us hard to be vulnerable around them because we inherently don't trust them. Your reaction, Mr. DeMaris?
That's a real hard one for me. I generally don't. And it will take me a long time to trust someone. And based on a lot of things that I've seen and experienced, and I've watched, not just in my situation, but in other situations, having female friends and seeing how they operate, being privy to how they kind of do certain things and how they kind of make their moves and really kind of scandalous in some respects. I don't. And but it would take me to speak to Mr. Charles' point. It would take me a long time to get to a point if there's a certain person that I become fond of. It'll take me a while to get to that point where I go, okay, this person is trustworthy enough for me to really open up and give them that that special kind of trust that I would, you know, entrust in someone. But in general, no, not at all.
Yeah. I'm going to come to this, Mr. DeMaris, because I said this earlier in a sense, and I said it seemed like they're in a rush to get married. And I'm wondering why. What is the rush? Because even when you're taking the vows, it's spoken, marriage is not to be entered into lightly. Well, why does it seem like they're a rush on their part to cross that line, to jump the broom?
I think society plays a role in that, this is what needs to happen to complete you as a person. That you have to have this particular relationship, and it needs to be legalized in this way. I think it's the way we're brought up and socialized as men and women, and how we raise our girls as opposed to how we raise our boys. We're not telling boys to go out there and get married right away. We're telling girls, you know, you find the right one and you settle down with. And so I think, you know, you watch movies. If you watch any of the Christmas movies, and they had a ton of them on Hallmark. It was about romantic, falling in love, and finding that special someone on Christmas. And so I think that kind of fuels a lot of people's, especially I think women, their need to, you know, find someone, settle down, and have someone at the house, and you call yourself married, you belong to. I think there's some women who need protection or feel like they need a protector or someone that's there to feel more secure. Not as them as a person, but a secure household where you're going to take care of kids, take care of household, and you all are going to be this unit. So I think there are a number of reasons why it's really easy for them to say, hey, this is what I want to happen, and I got a timetable, and this has to happen, and this. Look at the commercials with the diamond ring commercial. You know, he went to Jared's. You know, he went to Jared's at Christmas, buying the trucks and all this other stuff. You got to do this stuff at a certain time, or it doesn't mean anything. Or they equate it with you care about this person if you do it at this particular time. So it's marketing. It's society. It's sometimes it could be religion that pushes people to say, hey, you know, we're fooling around, and you know, we need to get this, you know, get this certified in order to really, you know, make this official. So it could be a number of reasons, man.
Yeah, I think you're touching a bunch of good. I think religion and upbringing plays a big part. I do, because I think they were told, like you said, we were raised differently, and they were raised to where, yeah, that's what you do. You find someone, you find one good man, you marry him, and you live happy ever after. And in the meantime, they were told, you know, just go around and, you know, give yourself to every man. You don't do this, you don't do that, blah, blah, blah. And a lot of that, whether good or bad, is stuck in their heads, and they can't let that go. And some of them have pushed beyond that and realized some of the stuff they said may not still apply, and some of them are still trying to live by that mantra. But I think, too, a lot of them, it is self-worth, bro. They want to feel like they're good enough that someone has chose them to be a wife. And they realize that they need that, in essence, to feel good. And it's like, what's wrong with me? Why am I not, you know? You hear them say sometimes, how did she get a husband and I can't get a husband? They compare themselves to what she may have, and they'll look at her and they'll tear her down. She's this, she's that, blah, 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 blah. So how does she? And not understanding that they're thinking, that thinking says, okay, I'm not fulfilled, I'm not full unless I have a husband. That someone chose me, someone took me out and thought I was worthy enough to make them their wife. And I think that plays a part of their self-esteem.
Mr. Charles, I come to you with this one, sir. Yeah, the same question. Why does it seem like they're in a rush? It doesn't even seem like it. It's just the actual truth. Why are they in a rush to get married?
I think DeMaurice hit it on the head with the society pressure, tradition from family. And that family pressure can go a long way. Their other sisters are married. They have kids. And it's crazy. And it's like, you need to find you a husband. And I think that goes a long way. I also think, too, that it was for a long time, it was just the way. It's like, well, that's what everybody else is doing. This is what you should be doing as well. And I think when you have that pressure, it's a lot easier for some women to go out and just try to find that guy or be open to that guy than to really stand up on their own and say, hey, you know what, I'm not pressed about it. I'm going to take my time. If it happens, great. If it doesn't, for some women, not being married is not an option. It's changed a little bit now because a lot of women are more independent. But still, overall, deep down inside, they've been presented that fairy tale of getting married and the beautiful wedding and everything and all your people around you, and it's your day to celebrate and have the picket fence and the 3.5 kids, 3.2 kids, whatever you want to do, something to that effect. But I think that dream is still there for a lot of women, even though they may not come out and talk about it all the time. A lot of it has to do with tradition.
Mr. Charles, you meet someone in early conversation, they said to you, you know, they've been married 2 or 3 times previously. How does that register with you?
I say they're experienced. I'll just But no, I mean, things happen. I mean, I've known people in my family that have been married several times, but sometimes you didn't meet the right person. Now, let me just say, it doesn't mean that we're necessarily going to the altar, but we can have a conversation because you just never know. Things happen, situations happen. Some people are. Some people are restless, you know. They jump into things quickly, and then they don't like it, they get out of them. But I think it's somebody that also, too, I'd say, you have to answer the question, I think it might be someone, too, that maybe falls hard quickly for love, what they consider love to be. They fall hard, and then they want to act right on it, right away sometimes. Because once you do it, I mean, I can only speculate, but once you do it once, then you do it again, and it didn't work the second time, and then you open for a third time, you got to say, what you get out of this? Did you learn? And it's your right to do whatever you want to, but you would think by the third time, you kind of be a little bit more cautious instead of ready to just go jump the broom. That's just my opinion.
I'm going to give the same question back to you, but I'm going to flip it in a sense. You know, you're talking to a cat, and he's told you, hey, I've been married 2 or 3 times. Now, you feel the same way towards him that you feel towards her?
Is that for me?
Yes.
Okay. I know it's kind of like the things where men were always given a pass where they could go hang out and date different women and do whatever they wanted to with them. And it was okay. But for the woman went out and had different suitors and dated different things, they would call her promiscuous or they call her a hoe. So, and the flip side, I would say, yeah, he's experienced the same way too. I look at it the same way. Other people may not, but I would, because even the one thing we don't honestly talk about too, some men are just as vulnerable and emotional as women when it comes to love. They fall hard. But we're supposed to be that man that's going to be strong and what have you. We don't have that discussion about things like that of being emotional and falling hard in love and not talking about your and sharing your emotions.
Dee Maurice, start with the woman first, but you come across her and she's been married two or three times. Does it mean anything to you?
Oh, yeah, that's a red flag. That is a red flag for me because at some particular point, you got to start wondering, okay, this person's been married and they're the common denominator. Maybe it's them. Maybe it's them. Maybe it's not the other person. Maybe it's them. Because you had three different people, two or three different people, and the denominator, common denominator is you. So that would send up a red flag for me that, you know, something about that particular person is not right, either male or female, that maybe it's you. And I remember a guy that we were working with on some footage for a video presentation for a project I was working on. And he said that. He was like, you know, you get in relationships and it don't work out. And you get in another relationship and it don't work out. And he said, sometimes he said he had to sit down and think. He said, well, maybe it's me. Maybe it wasn't me. Maybe it's just me.
Yeah.
And so it for me, it you know, it was like he had that aha moment that maybe it wasn't the people that I was dating. Maybe there's a character flaw in me that I keep jumping from person to person. And the relationships that I'm in never work out. And so I think it takes a big person to kind of figure that out. I'm not saying that those people won't ever kind of change their ways, but if they're constantly kind of going on like there's nothing that they did that was wrong, that, you know, they didn't contribute to why these relationships failed in the past, then you got to start thinking, like, especially if you're talking to them and they're kind of blaming the other person, and they're like, you kind of look at them with a red flag, like, you've been doing this two or three times. You didn't contribute anything to this. You know, you were the innocent victim and all these, red flag for me.
No, I agree with you to an extent because I think it shows something for me about your judgment. It just does, man. And I'm not knocking you because you did and I chose not to. But I think it says something about your judgment because you kind of, you know, you came out of first man, and I think you remember this from our grandmother. She would say to never jump out of one hot frying pan to another hot frying pan. And when she said that, she didn't even give you what the frying pan was. She would just tell you, don't jump out of one frying pan, Mr. Mark, and jump into another frying pan. And I kind of took that frying pan to be different things, but that's another thing I took it to be. Because to me, I think some people treat marriages like relationships, and they're a lot higher. They're a lot higher. You can bounce out a relationship, okay, it didn't work out, bang, you run to another one. It didn't work out, bang, you go to another. I get that, if that's what you choose to do. But when you say to yourself, you're going to take someone as being your spouse, you should be much surer about taking and bringing that person into your life to make him your spouse, to where it shouldn't be like a pinball, bang, 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 bang. Okay, that work, I'm going to go. It's like, at what point, man or woman, you know, at what point are, like you said too, Mr. Deuce, maybe it's you, but what point are you taking time to figure out what the hell is going on? But you're really just looking at what you're trying to achieve. You're trying to get to that pinnacle of being married. So, yeah, I do start to, I question your judgment, your rush, your thought process. It's like, what are you really trying to achieve here? Here's something that we talked about. It was one night after the sports show. And it's kind of, it wasn't a question, but it kind of came up in a conversation. And I think we had all of us had input. And I wanted to kind of bring it to this topic in a sense. You, I'm sure you two have heard, you might have came across, I've heard a woman that is not married or been married, the case may be. And she'll say to you, or she'll utter the words, I'm waiting for the Lord to send me a husband. Mr. Dee Maurice, when you hear that comes out, I know your mind must think something, sir. And what does it think?
Basically, it goes with a story that was once told to me a long time ago. But basically, she missed the boat. She missed the boat, two boats and a helicopter. And I'll explain. It was this man who was, I think, in the South in Louisiana, whatever, and there was this flood. So, you know, the flood was coming, and he went up to the second floor and looked out the window, and there was a boat that came by. I was like, listen, you know, there's a flood out here. We're, you know, saving people. You know, you want to get in the boat, you know, get out of this house. And he's like, no, I'm waiting for the Lord to save me. And so the water got higher, and he got on the roof. And another boat came by, and he was like, you know, same situation. The other guy said, hey, man, you know, it's getting bad out here. You want to jump on this boat, and, you know, we can save you. And he's like, no, I'll wait for the Lord to save me. So he's still on the roof, and the water's getting, you know, higher, and it's going to get to his waist. And a helicopter came by, and the guy yelling on the megaphone, hey, you know, the water's out there. We're here to save you. You know, you can get on this helicopter. And he yells up to the helicopter, no, I'm waiting for the Lord to save me. So he dies. And he gets up to heaven, and he's pissed off at God. I mean, just pissed off. And he's like, I was waiting for you to come save me, and you didn't come to save me. And God said, well, I sent two boats and a helicopter. And so that's what I hear when I hear, oh, I'm waiting for the Lord to send me a man. Maybe he did, and maybe you just missed it because it wasn't what you thought you were looking for. Or it might have been somebody who was your friend. Now, oh, I can't date you because you like a friend to me, or you like a brother to me. And it might have been somebody who's been in your life for years, and you passed up, and they went on and moved on and married somebody else. So when I hear somebody say that, it's like, you missed your opportunity, because I'm pretty sure there were a number of people who came by, but you just didn't pick up on the signs.
I'm going to take a little different approach. That's a good story. I remember hearing that story years ago, but take a little different approach. And I'm going to say this first, that you can't use prayer to replace laziness. And I think when I hear that, I don't think I know when I hear that, it's like you realize there's some stuff about you incorrect. But by saying that, you know what? God's going to overlook all that and just send me a husband. He's going to look at that. Yeah, I ain't good at that. No, I don't want to do this. No, but you know what? God, just in spite of all of that, God's going to send me a husband because that's what I want. And probably part of the reason he ain't sending it to you because you ain't got your shit straight. You don't. And I excuse me for using that in the language and using God's name in a sentence together, but sometimes things just have to be said. But you don't have your act together, but you're going to sit there and say, I'm just going to wait for God to send me. We'll keep waiting. Mr. Charles, your reaction?
Yeah, I guess when I hear that, it must mean that, one, that the person is really supposedly really religious and she's waiting for this to happen. But I'm questioning what is their main focus? Are they saying it because do they really believe that, or are they saying it because that's an easy answer to tell her friends that keep asking her when you gonna meet somebody and all that other stuff? It's an appropriate answer that people get off your back. But I guess the other part for me is, my question would be, what are you going to do about it? You can say, I'm waiting on God, I'm waiting on the Lord, but I'm like, well, what are you going to do? You know, God, they say God helps those who help themselves. What is your play in this? So it's like, okay, well, he's going to bring me that right man. He's going to come and sweep her off her feet. Then what? And that's when I think about that, I'm like, you just cannot, in life in general, there are things that do happen, but you just can't sit back and wait on God just to remove all this drama from you and deliver you into this perfect person, give you a perfect person that's going to come right by, knock on your door. Hey, I've been waiting on you. Here I am. I'm the guy you're looking for. You got to put some work in, bro. I mean, seriously. Well, my God. I mean, I love the Lord too, but I ain't expecting him to come here and give me everything I want. I might even pray for it. But he might send a little note now. All right, Charles, you do a little work. We'll see what happens. kind of, you know, just kind of leave it right there. Anyway.
Back at you with this question, Mr. Charles. You know, in some circles, man, you know, I know we think of marriage, of love, you know, you have this person, yada, yada, and you, you know, you came across and it's beautiful and you got that I'm going to Jared moment behind you, they're playing the song as you're walking in. But is there a part of marriage, when you really just look at it from a reality standpoint, that turns out to be a business deal?
Wow. I would say yes, especially now. Back in the day, maybe not when you're younger. But right now, it's like, okay, as I said before, how can this person enhance my life and how can I enhance theirs? Does it make sense? And no disrespect to people that may have be down in their luck or may not have a lot of things, but oftentimes you're going like, okay, well, we can do this. We can, finances play a part. So to answer your question, I would say yes, definitely, particularly now.
Yeah, I think so, and I think it's always been. I just don't think we looked at it that way. It's an agreement. It really is, and I you know, it is. If you don't think it is, then why do you have to go to court for resolution? Why you show up to court and they divide and do what's necessary? Why is that? Why does court doesn't say to you, you know what, you're no longer husband and wife, you go that way. You go left, he goes right. And realistically, it's never been sold to us or told to us that way. It's been told to us you find someone, you fall in love, and you get married to. But why does, when the time, if it doesn't work, they don't care about how long you've been together. They don't consider that. They don't consider your emotions. They don't consider none of that. It becomes a business deal that did not work. Your response, Mr. DeMaurice?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely a business deal. And I didn't really figure it out until I was going through the divorce. I didn't figure it out. And then I started to figure out, okay, this is a business transaction. And the end of that transaction was my last child support check, where all business was taken care of, like in The Godfather. This is the end of this business transaction. This is enough of me paying out for this bad decision that I made, not the kids, entering into a marriage with a woman that I did not love and did not want to spend the rest of my life with. It was a bad, bad deal for me. And so, you know, we talked about earlier about how, you know, why men are single. When you go through stuff like that, I know me, I was like, you know, if I start seeing it, it's kind of like the same way. Nah, I'm not going through that. I know you mentioned this on a show that we did on the podcast. I never to this day understood why one of our uncles married the same woman twice. I to this day, I've been trying to figure that out. And to this day, I have not figured that out, because if I know he went through even worse than I did in a divorce, and you just forget all that and go, you know what? Let's go again. Let's do this. let's give it one more try, baby. The second time around, better than the first time. I never understood that, because when all the stuff sitting there with lawyers negotiating all this stuff, I'm like, this is a business transaction. This is a business. This woman claims she loved me and all this other stuff, and we could have you know, broke it up, you know, equally and nice and neat, without anybody else involved in it. But when it came to that, I'm like, okay, she's been looking at this as a business transaction all the time, and she's been getting the king's ransom all the time. And once I'm finished with this, no more. That's it. This business transaction, told her, this business transaction is over. I owe you nothing. Don't want to hear from you anymore. Don't care to hear from you anymore. Because I realized, I went in it, and I didn't think it was a business transaction, but you made me realize it was a business transaction. So, not again, not me. But my boy said, it's a trick to it. If I ever do it again, it's got to be a trick to it.
I want to go back and jump on our uncle getting married to the same woman. And I know I laughed at that for years, bro, and bro, it was comical. And I think Ramami said to him sometime, or somebody said to him, "You're so stupid. You married the same woman twice." But I'm going to say this, I remember watching a show one day, and it kind of spoke to that a little bit, and I kind of seen this with some people. Sometimes you get comfortable with what you're familiar with, mm-hmm. and you might step away from someone, and you realize what's out there. You don't know. It's not comfortable. So you start back up with what you're familiar with, and what happens is, and what happened, the things that bothered him when he started back up just communicating, he didn't see those things. He just didn't see them. And what happened is when two people come back together, nothing has changed. Nobody changed. So when they got back together, the same things that irritated her or irritated him were still there. Interesting enough, when I was separated, a friend of mine one day, when I was talking, and he went home. I don't know what made him call me back, but he called me back and he said, "Mark, I know you're not thinking about this, but I got to say this to you because it happened to me." And he said, "I want to spare you from it, bro." He said, "Whatever you do, don't go back." He said, "Because sometimes," he said, "you're going to go back." He said, he said, "I'll tell you." He said, "You go back." He said, "I did." He said, I went back." And he said, "For the first month or two, it was good." He said, "Because the things that, the reason why we weren't together, they weren't showing up yet. They just weren't popping up yet." But he said, "It won't be long for the things that bother you, that troubled you, will pop back up." And he said, "That's when you're going to be sitting home on the couch one day, watching TV and go, 'How did I get here?'" So he said, "I did that." So don't you do it. That's a broad free. I said, "I appreciate the heads up. But that's one thing you ain't got to worry about, because that ain't happening here." But that's how I think Uncle fell back in.
I was in high school. He was in martial arts. So he built a dojo in his garage, I guess, to get out the house. And he had the punching bag and all the floors all cushioned up and everything, all this stuff. And he always wanted me to keep coming over there. And I'm like, I don't want to keep coming because he always wants to spar me. I want to see what you got. And I would always beat him and show him, different things. And so my mother one time said, "Well, I need something from Harley's house. Harley called, and I want you to go over there and get this." And I'm like, "Man, this is the last time I'm going over there. I'm going to get him real good so he don't want me to come back over here." So I knew what he wanted. I run the doorbell. His wife's like, "Oh, he's back in the garage." I went back there. I was mad. I was just hemming him up all that for about an hour. And the next time I went over there, he just tore all that stuff down, took all that stuff out the garage. It was cars in the garage. Oh, my man, you're using me to get away from your wife, man. I know you just want to be in here and have an excuse to be away from her. So I'm like, "Man, he's just using me just to do that every time. Like, come on, let's go in the garage." I'm like, "No, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it." But he was just using it. And I think he got to a point where he was just miserable. And I kept seeing that. I'm like, he's not really trying to, learn this art. He just want to get out the house. And he can't leave the premises, so he's going to be in the garage.
Think about that, though, for a second, man. I mean, just give that a thought for a second. You marry someone. Mr. Charles, you know nothing about this, so it may be hard for you to think about it. I understand, bro. So I won't even come to you with this, bro. I won't even come to you with this one. But, Mr. Jimmy Reese, think about this for a second. You marry someone. Well, I ain't going to say someone. You use your ex-wife, bro. You use your ex-wife. You and her party went your separate ways. 6 months to a year later, you stand in front of someone and vow to take her hand again. Don't you think you'd be out in the garage kicking some stuff too? Well, listen, do you think of
point taken,
Mr. Charles? Mr. Charles, I got a question for you, Mr. Charles. This is remember years ago, Steve Harvey being the great marriage counselor that he was, the great matchmaker that he was. Wait a minute, he's none of that. He just sold a book. Oh, I got it. So, Mr. Charles, if you were to give a title to a book for women looking to basically get married or whatever, what would that title be, sir?
Wow. See, I actually went out and found a real book. I've been doing just a title. I went and found a real book. And can I just say something real quick about that earlier conversation?
Absolutely, bro. Take your time.
If you get divorced, and I have not been married, but if you get divorced, and as you said, 6 months later, you going back down the aisle, you need some psychiatric treatment. That must be some hella fire weed, and I want some of that. Anyway, 6 months later.
I don't think it was a weed. I really don't.
But 6 months, it was something. It was something. Might not be a weed, but it was
something.
And we know what it was.
What made him
new? look, you know what it was. Sometimes, you know, it's what they call, what they say, you got that mojo thing on you.
That's what I'm saying.
That thing on you. That thing
know,
on your head,
know,
you just can't
know,
leave it alone.
I know.
Can't walk away from it. Can't walk away from it. Can't walk away from it. Like, oh,
let's go
man,
there
what
for a second, man. Let's go there for it. Let's go there, man, because realistically, that's just, we got to hit this, because a lot of cats, especially their wives, their women, or whatever, and I'm not saying you should think about this, but when they enjoy someone sexually, they don't want no one else coming behind them, bro. They don't want anyone else. They can't imagine anyone else. And there's some men that are stay with the woman just because they're not happy, but they don't want to be happy with nobody else. They don't want no one else to think of the idea no one else is going to please her, whatever the case may be. So they'll run through what they'll run through and do what they got to do. They'll get a side chick. They do all this other stuff because they are too afraid to walk away and be happy based on what she's given him. And I've said this numerous times, and I'll say it again. What she's given you, Doc, is not yours. It can never be yours. You know, if you're married, hey, you have access. You have access. But the moment you start thinking that is yours and it belongs to you, you done screwed your head up. And a lot of cats are screwed up upstairs behind that, bro. And a lot of women will say this is yours. No, it ain't. It never was. It never will be. That's always been my thought process. You could tell me that till the cows come home. That sounds good, but I don't buy into it because it's not. And I'm never going to treat it like it's mine. What I possess, what I was born with, is what I have. I can call that mine. But ain't nothing you giving me, no matter how good the stimulation is, I'm just going to start to think is mine. What do you think, Mr. DeMaris?
I forgot the question.
I'm asking, I mean, based on the fact, because you know, we was talking about, he said he needed psychiatric hit. I think part of the reason why he remarried, sexual to help, Mr. Charles said, I think part of the reason why our uncle remarried, he didn't want to see his ex-wife with anybody else, bro.
Probably.
The way she made him feel sexually. Yeah. He didn't want to allow that to be experienced by anyone else. So he felt like by remarrying her, part of it, I'm not saying he didn't care about it, but in the back of his head, he's blocking another man from coming in and experiencing that. And what I was saying is a lot of men are trapped in that mindset to not even move on.
Yeah, and I think sometimes, you know, that woman can do tricks that nobody else could do. And they miss that. And they don't want, you're right, both of you are right. They don't want nobody else to know that she could do that same trick and feel the way he felt. So, and then, you know, another thing probably, you know, is the saying that the devil you're with is better, devil you know is better than the devil you don't know. And so maybe, you know, he got into a situation where it was worse than his marriage and said, you know what, if I got to go back and deal with all this, I will, yeah, because I'm not dealing with all that. But it's crazy. I've seen a number of dudes do that in relationships and in marriage, especially marriages. And it's like, what'd you miss the first time that you're going to go back and try to experience this again? And it's going to be different. And it's not. It's not. They're going to put on an act. They're going to put on their best behavior. And once they get you locked in, you're sitting there in that living room. And I've seen a number of us are sitting there in that living room like, how did I get back here? What was I thinking?
Mr. Charles, I've been back to you, man.
No, tell me it's not true, cousin.
No, I mean like in a relationship where I, you know, we broke up and then we came back together. I'm like, damn, why didn't I stay out? Not in a marriage, in a relationship.
It pulls it back in. It pulls it back in.
Because what you do, you start thinking of that good time, that good feeling. Oh, I want some more.
Yeah, y'all reminiscing. Y'all on the phone. Remember that time when we did this and the whipped cream and the banana pudding and all that? Oh, man. You get that one time and then you are on your way back. You seal the deal with the booty call. You go into the booty call, y'all back in the relationship again. Messed up, man. Messed up.
Many relationships is consummated by booty call, my brother.
Booty calls, man.
You wake up in the morning, you're in a relationship.
You're in a relationship now.
Where are we going?
What are we doing today?
Oh, what are we doing today? You still here? Wait a minute, Mr. Charles.
Mm-hmm.
Man, Mr. Charles, if there was a title of a book that you could come up with, that was a question. I'm sorry, bro.
Now you gotta let me get some of that. You gonna move to the next question? Really?
No, bro.
I know it's your show.
I'm sorry, man. It's wide open. Go, my
whoa,
brother. Go.
Oh
I'm
my
sorry.
Goodness.
I didn't hear you jump in, so I didn't know. I'm sorry. Please go. I'm trying to be polite.
No, go
ahead, sir.
Damn.
Come on.
Anyway,
now.
But no. But here's the thing. It's the whole thing like that mojo working. You already know there are some men that when things happen sexually, a woman has a thing, has the ability to arouse him and put him in a position that you can't, he cannot even explain to another man. We know that has happened to some men. You can't, and somebody, hey, man, why are you messing with her, man? She cut the clothes up. And you're like, I ain't messing with her. And you go around the corner, he right there, right there. Damn, you just let her go. It's been 2-3 weeks ago. I know we got divorced, but that ain't official. I can't let her go. I'm telling you, man. Dude, I'm trying to tell you, man. And when that thing call you, bro, sometimes it's worse than drugs, bro. When that thing call you, Some men just, they can't explain it. They let it go. That's all I'm just saying to you, bro. And we may not say it publicly. We may not talk to our dudes about it. You may say, well, you got to be strong. He like, you ain't had this. It's one of those things, Mark, kind of like that damn, kind of like that macaroni and cheese, bro. You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
you get that
here we
thing.
Go. Here we go.
He's like, y'all.
I don't want no macaroni
and cheese.
I ain't
gonna eat that. I ain't letting it go. I don't want that. Look, then you like, damn.
I don't want
that. Again, when you got something that good, boy. I'm trying to tell you, you got something that good. You were like, I ain't eating that. Okay, watch.
I think of two songs that, man, that fit the bill here. There's two songs. Mm-hmm. One of them is James Brown, Get Up Off of That Thing. And then the next one is Bill Withers. Use me. Can't use me no more.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, that right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, my friends don't know.
Yeah.
What you do to me?
Just use me up. No doubt. But
you know, when your brother come and talk to you, when your brother like, listen, we got to sit down and talk about this because this is just getting out of control. When you put your hand on your brother's shoulder, like, if you only knew. You be wishing you were in my shoes. That's some good stuff, bro. That's some good stuff.
Can I say one thing, too? You right. And
you're
when
sure.
Your brother come, be like, look, man, let that go. And then you like, all right, I let it go. And then he go, look, hey, man, did you call it back yet? I know it's been 3 years, but the way you talked about that thing, you sure you don't want that one word? Woo, yes, sir. Anyway, so getting back to your question, a title, and this is a real book. I went looking for a book, but this is a real book, and I found it interesting. It's called Why Men Love Bitches by Sherry Argo. And it's about from Doormat to Dream Girl, A Woman's Guide to Holding Her Own in a Relationship. That's a real book, bro. Yeah, there you go.
Wow, I'm gonna come up with a personal title, but there's a book, man, that didn't get the recognition that it deserved, but she wrote two. But the second one she wrote, I read both. And being that you're gonna go to an author and a real book, I'm gonna drop that too. Scheherazade Ali, her first book was A Black Man's Guide to Understand a Black Woman. Raw. If you have not read that book, you really need to. I think she wrote it about over, I don't know, 20-some-odd years ago, close to 30. That book needs to be purchased. But on the flip side, sister was so mad at her, they didn't even catch this. She came out and wrote a book, A Black Woman's Guide to Understand a Black Man. And that book is another one that needs to be purchased and read. Sometimes you may have to read it twice. Because we can't love each other truthfully until we understand each other. We just can't. And I'm not saying you read her book and you have this great understanding, but that is the basic reality. You know, you can't love me until you understand me. And if you don't want to try to understand me, don't even try to love me. But I was going to go with a title if I came up with my own. It's about, how about being a selfless, loving, caring, God-fearing woman? That will be a title that I'll put on a book that women should read and understand what's going on to basically understand us. Mr. DeMaurice, man, you write books, man. So you might just put one of your titles up here, bro. If you want to, that's cool. So what do you have?
No, it's a movie title. Spike Lee did a movie. If you haven't seen this movie, you got to watch this movie called She Hate Me. That would be my movie title.
Ooh.
She Hate Me.
Ooh.
She hate me.
Woo-hoo-hoo.
Great movie.
Gentlemen.
Great movie.
Yeah. Let's throw some questions. That's when that's the one when Kerry Washington was in that movie, when before she was Kerry Washington. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah, boy. Yes. Mr. DeMaurice, your question for us this week, sir?
Question is, should you feel guilty for wanting what's best for you?
Ooh. No, not really. No, I don't think anybody should be a selfish person, but you're entitled to have and live and do whatever you want to do, bro. And if you make those choices, as long as you're not hurting away in the process, I don't think no guilt is necessary. Your reaction, Mr. Charles?
Definitely not. I would say that particularly now because, you know, this life is short. And then if you succumb to somebody else's wishes and you're not happy, eventually you will be miserable. Real talk. You got to be happy first, man.
Mr. Charles, your question, sir? I'm sorry. Wait. Forgot that. Ms. DeMaurice, here we go, bro. Your own question. Answer to your own.
Yeah, I started really thinking about this because a couple of weeks ago when I did the book Zoom meeting, one of the sisters asked me, are you an empath? And I get that question all the time. And basically through the writing, I think she kind of picked up on it. And empaths are folks that can feel people's energies and feel what people are feeling and kind of empathize with them and kind of consume what they're feeling as their own. And sometimes I know in my life I have attracted a lot of needy people, a lot of people who are really, really kind of traumatized by some other, incident that happened in their lives and toxic people. And so, this year and even before this year, I started getting to the point, and now I'm at the point where it's like I used to feel guilty for not really being obligated or being obligated to someone else when I'm not really happy and kind of sacrificing my own happiness for someone else. But, I'm slowly and surely getting to the point where I'm not feeling guilty for not doing what's best for me, regardless of what the situation is.
I'm glad you're moving in that direction, sir. I'm happy to hear that, man. Mr. Charles, your question, sir.
Yeah, I'm sure over our lifetimes, or even it might be on a constant basis, people have come to you for advice, and some people might come to you for advice on a regular basis. The question is, do you ever find yourself literally taking your own advice that you've given to someone else?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, man, without a doubt. Usually, I'm not going to, say something to you if I'm not willing to embrace it and do it myself. And absolutely, man. Yeah, I'm not saying if I give you a piece of advice or something that I have done or whatever. I just evaluate the situation and kind of see what I think is the best way to apply and move on from it. But yeah, that's most definite, Mr. DeMaurice.
Yeah, sometimes I had to catch myself when I'm giving people advice about, and then I find myself in the same situation, maybe afterwards or down the road afterwards, really kind of rethinking what I told somebody else, or what I think in the academic terms is you disassociate yourself from yourself and kind of look at it from the outside, the same problem you're having, you kind of look at it from the outside, see what advice you would give yourself to do. And sometimes I have to do that in order to give the same advice I've been giving out to other people. Because once you're in that same situation, sometimes you don't see it as clearly as when you're outside of it. So sometimes I have to catch myself really kind of say, oh, okay, this is the advice that I'm giving this person. I need to give myself the same advice when I get into situations like this, or remember this situation so I can move out of this negative situation just like I'm helping this person move out of theirs.
Mr. Charles.
Yes and no, though. Because sometimes some people's situations, it's like that what they've been through doesn't affect me, and I haven't been through it, and I'm not in that situation. And maybe because I think differently, or whatever it may be, but I really had to be careful because I said, well, because I think a certain way doesn't mean they think the same way. So not always, but always, and I wouldn't do that, but it might be the best thing for that person.
This is a question that I'm going to throw a question out there, and if you two have another question I'll come back to. We got some time here. But I saw Eddie Murphy did a movie a couple of years ago. I think it was about Rudy Moore.
Rudy Moore.
It was a good movie. And he had Wesley Snipes in the movie. And Wesley Snipes, to me, has taken on a particular look that doesn't look like the old Wesley Snipes. And it looks like Wesley Snipes might be feeling a little sugar. Now, I saw the trailer for Coming to America 2, and he's in this movie with Eddie Murphy, and kind of seeing some of those same tendencies. Wow. And looking and seeing that, I know this is based on an individual thing, but if you looked at someone over a period of time and they started changing in front of you, so to speak, and took on more of a feminine attribute, how would you feel towards that person? I'll come to you first with this, Mr. Charles.
Well, I wouldn't feel really anyway, because, I mean, that's what they do, right? That's who you are. That's how you roll with. I've had situations where I've seen people change, and I really didn't know whether or not that affected who they are. Are they really switching who they are as a person, or are they just kind of going into their feminine side in regards to how they look? But as long as our relationship stays the same and they stay, it stays the same, it does not affect me. I'm good. I don't really look at it differently, because I know that happens. Like, for years, other people have talked about other stars that might be, considered more feminine. But then the question is, how do you deal with it? Because to me, as long as you're the same person, I'm not even tripping off of it. That's your choice. You got to rock with it. You got to roll with it.
Your reaction, Mr. DeMaurice?
Yeah, it doesn't affect me either or because you'd be surprised on some of the manly men that you see out there that they're playing these manly men roles, and if you knew them in real life, it's totally different. It's all acting, it's all entertainment, and so I really don't, I don't know them personally, and I see them in roles. And maybe when I was younger, I kind of got into it and was more, it affected me more because they were role models or people I looked to and all that. But I think as you get along further in this journey, you don't kind of pay too much attention, pay too much mind to what people's lives and what they're doing. Different strokes for different folks, as the elders would say. So if that's the way you want to be, that's the way you want to be. That's none of my business, actually.
I kind of used him as a foundation, but I was kind of really kind of just speaking like in general. If you knew someone close to you, I would have no other choice but to accept it, but it would bother me, bro. That would bother me. Maybe I'm more of the old school gentleman, and I came up in a time when that was not commonplace. That was not something that you kind of attribute to a real man being. And maybe I'm still stuck there. Maybe I'm one of the few that are still stuck there. But when that transformation kind of takes place in front of you, and it's not that you don't have a right to do whatever you want to do. That's your choice. But if I'm honest and true about my feelings, yeah, I feel a certain way about that. I do. I just do, man. Especially if I saw you as a strong black man, yeah, that does bother me. It does. And that's not to say, who am I to judge, whatever the case may be, but I'm honest with my feelings, and that's what I feel. And I'll say this, man. I it bothers me to an extent that we're losing a lot of our brothers to that. Losing, and I'm not afraid to say we are losing a bunch of our brothers to that. And for whatever reason, I know some of the reasons, and I'm not going to go into them, but yeah, it bothers me. Because I think that hurts us as men, There's just this black man that just does. It weakens us. And we may not want to see it as such, but that's my perception. Mr. Charles, you have another question, sir? We'll come with it.
Yeah. I want to kind of piggyback off what you said a little bit. We've been through this journey for a while. My question would be, do you think it's our responsibility to try to keep black men as whole strong?
You say that again. You think it's our responsibility? What now? Say that one more time.
I said no. The question is, do you think as a black man, as you mentioned before about it being certain people changing a certain kind of way, being a certain kind of way, do you think that it is our responsibility as black men to try to keep black men, the race of black men, as a whole strong, as a unit, as a whole?
I would say yes, and that's responsibility. And I say that because it's not that when you look at the scope of us, what we've been through in this country, and it's not that many of us. And you know, you two both spoke earlier about women outnumbering us. That's part of the reason why, bro. I mean, I remember years ago, and I didn't want to see this as being fact, but I remember years ago, the ex-wife used to always say to me, it's going to come a time when women are not going to have a large pool of men to choose from. I'm like, nah, I can never see it. And she would say, based on us being in jail and based on us wanting to be with other men, it will be a shortage. I'd be damned if she ain't right, bro. I'd be damned if she ain't right. And when we stop, this is I know this is far-fetched thinking, and maybe it's not that far-fetched of thinking, but when black men stop producing babies with black women, where are we going to be? Where are we going to – I mean, 20, 30 years from now, we think we're a minority now. Where are we going to be? So, yeah, maybe that's deep thinking and that's out-the-box thinking, but that does something to our – well, actually, that does something to our race. It does. So here again, you can be free to do whatever you want, but I always remember is we're standing on shoulders of people that came before us that allow us to do what we do and thought of us long before we were even a thought, our vision, our parents' wombs, our eyes. So I feel a debt to them. You know, I just do. When I think as black men, some of us, we live like hell. I'm just going to party like it's 1999, do whatever I want to do. Screw the race. Your response, Mr. DeMaurice. We're going to close things down. Your response, sir.
Yeah, I mean, you can always be the example. You can always mentor the men you're around and try to be as a good a role model as possible. And, yeah, it's an obligation, but when it's all said and done, people are going to choose what they decide to choose. So try to be the best role model, try to be the best mentor, and do what you can to mentor up-and-coming black men, young men, to be black men and sharing their help and sharing the responsibility of keeping us strong.
Mr. Charles, got like a minute 30 to go. Your response, sir?
Yeah, no problem. I think it's about setting an example, and people look at you and see the example that you're setting. Some will follow. Other opportunities, as Dee Marie said, reaching out to young men and just showing them how to be proud of themselves. And then in the end, they eventually are going to decide what they want to do. But I think the key is no matter what, you have to set the example by the way that you live your life.
Good point, gentlemen. Good point. I like how we basically take anything, man. Again, we're not afraid to tackle it and bring our perspective to it. That's what we do with Black Men Talk. It's Mr. Charles, Mr. DeMaurice, Mark Elliott. We don't shy away from things that need to be said. And it's our perspective, our provocative talk on love, relationships, and different facts of life. And we'll continue to do it again. We're moving to 2021. Gentlemen, next time we get together, it actually will be 2021. Y'all have a safe and a prosperous new year. And then we'll talk soon.